Sophie.
And I'm Allie.
And it's About Time for True Crime. Hey.
Hey, guys.
How are you?
How are you doing?
What's been new?
What are you doing?
Ooh, what are you wearing? Okay. Actually, I do like that, though. Link it. How has your January been? It's been about 6 years.
Yes.
I'm so excited to say that we've finally moved to February.
January was the longest month of the year.
Yeah.
But also, seriously, it felt like it didn't end.
It was a decade of a month.
Lots of fun stuff, but yeah. Just lots of stuff.
So much. And so much happening inside,
mm-hmm.
outside.
Everywhere.
All at once, you know?
I have to say thank you so much to all of you who have emailed.
Yeah.
I hope by the time you get this, we've responded. But especially with just anything that goes on in the world, if we are able to be like your comfort space and we can, which is awful that it's like, hey, true crime, we're gonna talk about really awful things. But if we can get through those things together and we can just have a good time and there's room at the table for all of us and we can grow and learn and do cool things, then at least we can do it together, you know?
It's true. And in at least especially the US, and I know elsewhere too, like, we are a place you can go that is politics free. There is so much happening and everybody has so many opinions. And here, you're not going to get any of that.
No, because we've actually, or at least I can't say we, for me, I hate how often all of that is brought up. I just feel like I can't go anywhere to enjoy anything without something like that in my face. So I'm really happy to create a space that leaves all of that out, because of course it's important and of course it matters, but right now, right here, we just like to have a space that is free from that.
Yeah,
everyone's welcome here, you included.
Especially you.
And also you.
And with you.
And also with you.
So that is just, I don't know, a little blurb. We like to keep it safe and comfortable here for everybody.
It's also still really fucking cold.
It's so fucking cold
in New England.
And
so
I'm being such a baby, and I'm being so big and brave about this.
So big and brave, getting up every day and going to work.
Ugh, I did not want to today. I said, but it's cold.
How could you want to today? It was like 10 degrees.
It was cold, and I had a heated blanket inside.
Oh,
where other people weren't.
Yeah, yeah. And a kitty cat.
Yeah. Oh, but my lamenting is over. We are in a new year. We're in a new era. I have bangs now.
You do. I'm looking at them right now. They're cute as hell.
I can tell. You're welcome. How about you guys? What has your 2025 brought? Do you have bangs? Does your pet have new bangs?
Ooh, have you sent a picture of your pod pet?
Why not? I want to see them. They're so
cute. Why haven't you? And if you've sent it before, have you taken cute pictures since then?
Oh,
I think we'd like to see them.
Let me see.
Thank you. And I just take it at this point now, if you're sending the pod pets, that like you want them shared.
Yeah.
So just like let me know if you're going to send them.
Please.
Oh, by the way, it's okay.
Yeah.
Because that makes my heart happy.
And specifically, if it's not okay, definitely let us know.
Yes.
But I don't want to tease you guys too much. But Allie and I did have a bestie day the other day.
We did have a bestie day.
And we watched a wee something.
We watched a wee something indeed.
On a long case series we covered once upon a time.
Like several weeks, if not 2 months worth of episodes.
Truly.
Regarding this case.
And so just leaving this little... a little tidbit here, a breadcrumb, if you will, that you might get to hear that if you sign up for some of the things that we're doing in the future.
You're going to have to stay tuned for that, but it may or may not have been a 3-part Netflix series we watched. Ooh, we're not going to say anything else.
Okay. Anyway, thought I'd drop that here. I thought you guys might be interested.
Yes.
But otherwise, that's really it. I don't know. Things have been... so much and so little all at once, as the way every January is.
Yeah, things are crazy banana pants, but we're going to get through it and we're going to do it together and we're going to have some laughs along the way.
It's so true.
Because that's all we can do, right?
Oh my gosh, yeah. Because if we're not laughing, we are crying.
At this point, ugly sobbing.
Oh, a
more
lot.
So. Last week.
Oh, that was rough.
Whew. I needed a breather after that one. And of course, I went on this like big deep dive rabbit hole on the family and the Pettit Family Foundation.
Oh, of course you did.
And how incredible it is, and how just, oh my God, that family, just like, I would have been friends with them.
Yeah.
And it stuck with me what you said that the dad had remarked on, which was, you can go to bed and have everything and wake up with nothing.
Absolutely.
And that just, whew, that is exactly what happened. And not only did he have to fight for his own health and safety and well-being, I mean, he was on death's doorstep as well. Yeah. He had taken a baseball bat to the head.
Ugh.
But to lose everything he lost and to still be gracious and loving and kind, where if anybody had an excuse to hate everything and everyone, I think it would be him.
Oh, yeah.
And he's just, he's done incredible despite it all. So that, what a tale.
If you haven't listened, definitely bring tissues. Maybe also find something to just calm you down after, because I know I needed that.
Maybe scroll through our pod pets. We have a highlight so you can see all of the pod pets so that you don't
not
have
the
to
good
go
boys and girls.
Digging for the good boys and girls, because the good boys and girls are right there.
Yeah.
And then we have a reprieve little highlight, which is just funny, goofy. Maybe it'll make you smile. Maybe it'll make you laugh.
Yeah, and if you're saying, but hey, I've never seen these things, what are you talking about? It's in our Instagram. That's in the link tree below. You can always get to everything that we're talking about through there.
That is, as of right now, the only social media that we are, like, using. And
yeah.
So that's how you can reach us.
Definitely. Or email, or I don't know if you can send messages on, like, PayPal or Venmo. We have those in there. There's Redbubble if you want merch. And I think our email is in there, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And if you wanted to, I don't know, rate, review, download, tell a friend, tell a family member, we would absolutely not be upset about it.
No, we'd love it. And we'd say, oh my gosh, hi, you came.
Thank you.
Wow.
And even if you listen on Spotify, which like the vast majority of you do, if you wanted to leave us just a cute little note on Apple Podcasts, it makes my heart happy, because
it does.
I think it's so rarely used, but I really like that you can see the comments there. Just,
yeah.
Hey, like, be nice.
Or if you guys want to interact with us, we read every single time that you guys share a what did you think about this episode in the box below on Spotify. So you just scroll up and it'll show you that little Q&A.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Are we ready to get into it?
I think we're ready.
All right. You have a thing to say.
Me. Okay. Sorry about that. Yoo-hoo. Pod's on. Pod is on and it's hot and ready.
Hi, hello, and welcome back to your favorite true crime podcast.
Aww,
about time for true crime. Thanks for hanging out with us in our little corner of the true crime world.
Mm.
I have a case for you today. I'm sure that's shocking.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Abby's jaw is on the floor.
Uh-huh. Picking it up.
So the case that we're going to cover today, I actually learned about from another episode of Evil Lives Here. I've just been on a groove watching that. I don't watch a ton of true crime shows super often, but they really have to pique my interest for me to actually like want to cover the case too and watch it and like really care. And this one did.
Ooh.
So full disclosure, there is not a plethora of information available on this case, which is partially why I really wanted to cover it, because I didn't think it was being talked about enough. And it kind of ties into an episode that we had done in the past, but we're going to talk about that when we get there.
Ooh.
So, in my opinion, it should be talked about, which is in part why we're talking about it.
Hell yeah.
Because there's not a ton of reliable information available on the early lives of all involved, I did take a lot of information for writing this episode from an episode of Evil Lives Here and an episode of Snapped, but I got a lot of case text stuff to confirm all of like the trial stuff as well from other sources. But I really like sometimes the interviews that they have. I will say like Snapped is just, it's, this was season 16 that this is from.
Gosh.
So like this show has been on a while. And it's just a me thing. I don't love the super dramatic retelling of a case where I think Snapped really does that. And maybe that worked for a while. And obviously it still works for them. They're still doing it.
So yeah, 16 seasons at least.
Yes. So I don't tend to gravitate towards shows like that with like kind of the narrator being very dramatic. But I do like that you're hearing it from the people that are involved. A lot of these people are interviewed. They tell their own story in their own way. And I feel a lot of value in that, I think. So I just want to sort of give that disclaimer that a lot of this is pulled from that, but I will have both of those episodes listed in my sources as well, just so if you want to watch them and compare notes or go look at things, that you can absolutely do that. But I did do a lot of digging elsewhere too, I promise. You'll see all of that as well. But just for funsies, I used that episode of Evil Lives Here, that episode of Snapped, and then I utilized texascourts.gov, KLTV News, Case Text, and more. So you will see them all listed below.
Yes, every time we do anything, you get all of our linked sources, baby.
That's how we roll. So we're going to start today with Kimberly.
Kimberly, that's a cute name.
It is. Kimberly Pitts was born in Mississippi in 1966. In school, she was popular. She was a cheerleader. She was a good student. She had sort of all of that going for her. She was social and bubbly and likable and, well, you know the type.
Yeah.
After graduation, where many thought Kim would have been college bound, she decided to settle down and get married, and she had a baby.
Aww.
Soon after, though, she was divorced. She began work as a receptionist at a medical supply company to support herself and young child. While I think the father of the child was involved, I think she was primary parent. When she felt ready to enter the dating world again, she was invited on a blind double date with friends to be set up with a man named Brian Cargill.
Okay.
And this was in 1992. Brian was newly divorced. Okay. He also had a child from a previous marriage, and this is when he met Kimberly. At first, the two formed sort of a friendship, the camaraderie given the circumstances that they were sort of navigating at the same time, where they had recently been divorced and that whole legal process, and then co-parenting and how all of that looks. And so they just sort of found comfort in each other initially.
Yeah.
Kim was actually in the midst of a pretty bitter divorce and custody battle, and it cost not only a lot of money, but it was just very stressful and worrisome and frustrating at times, and Brian felt for what she was dealing with.
Mm.
Having, again, recently gone through at least all of the legality parts of it, I don't know that his divorce was as contentious as hers was, but
right,
he could relate. And within weeks, their friendship had turned romantic, and it seemed to be going well.
Ooh.
But that's what happens in these cases. If it started horribly, it's where it would end, and we wouldn't be talking about it. I think when we're in relationships for a long time, our threshold for, like, assholery gets... We can withstand more.
Yeah.
So in the beginning, you're pretty, like, no, I'm not going to deal with that. But over time, it's like we get worn down a little bit, and there's more that we're willing to tolerate.
Right.
But also the more we know and love the person and we have a history and we have all of these things, and a lot of times that's worth it. In this case, not so much.
Oh.
It went well for a few weeks when they first started dating, but it really did only take a couple of weeks for the first hiccup that Brian remembers.
Oh.
He said she invited him to a support meeting for those recently divorced. It had helped her. She hoped it might help him too. He'd never gone to one before, so he was a little, like, apprehensive, but willing to go, and I give him a lot of credit for that.
Yeah.
So he got there, and he got there early, and he went inside, and he took his little seat, and she wasn't there yet. But when Kim got there, she went in the meeting, but she didn't sit with Brian. In fact, she didn't even sit near him. She sat far away from him. And after the meeting, he was like, hey, sorry I got here first. Is everything okay? I thought you'd sit with me. She freaked out at him, yelling at him about how dare he go into the meeting without her, that essentially he had embarrassed her by doing that. She invited him, and that means you wait outside until she gets there and you go in together. Like, she was very possessive over how could you go in without me.
Okay.
Which was just very odd. And he said it was like a switch flipped, because then she was back to being lovey and romantic, but she had just so quickly gotten so upset about something relatively trivial.
Yeah.
And possessive. Like, how dare you not wait for me to go in? And she was late to the meeting. So she was like, she already was kind of, it's rude to show up late, right? Like, it's not great. So was he just supposed to wait outside? And I don't know. It just.
Yeah. That's, I guess, concerning from, like, a mental health standpoint of, like, how can we snap and be this angry, but also then immediately sort of switch back?
Well, the show is called Snapped.
Oh, well, fair. You know what?
I'm just saying.
But also, just kind of being late just kind of disrespects everybody's time that's there. And I guess asking him to partake in that so that you don't have to walk in late alone is difficult. Like, I understand if maybe she was anxious to go in, but it sounds like she had been going long enough that she was comfortable there.
You invite someone to a meeting and then they go to that meeting and you're mad?
Hey, no. How dare you?
And actually, like, visibly angry, not frustrated or a little pissed or like, oh, I wish you waited.
Yeah,
not
like selfie, temperamental about it. Yeah.
Just actually angry, pissed about it, which just really caught him off guard.
Understood. Yeah.
So that was odd.
Sure.
But he did kind of chalk this up to a one-time thing and moved on, and it made it easy to forget when he was essentially being love bombed any other time. So that helped.
Sure does. Helps a lot of people.
But time had gone on, and this controlling, strange behavior continued from Kim. He didn't want to be in a relationship with anymore. But then she dropped this on him. She was pregnant.
Oh.
Brian was blindsided because she told him that after having her first child, her doctor told her that she would no longer be able to get pregnant. So he operated under that assumption.
Right.
And then he said, I want to break up. And she said, well, funny you mentioned that. We're a family now. And
funny how that timing works.
He wanted to come up with some kind of co-parenting plan. And she essentially threatened him and said, you'll never see this child unless you marry me.
Oh.
So now instead of breaking up, they got married.
Well, that's not informed and willing consent.
Nope. Because Brian couldn't imagine a world where he had a child out there that didn't know him, that he wasn't a father to, that he didn't have an active role in raising. So Brian, very reluctantly, married Kim.
Aww.
Brian remembers on the morning of the wedding, he went outside to be alone and had himself a good cry. Because Brian, he knew this wasn't going to last and it wasn't going to go well. He didn't want to marry this woman. And he knew that she meant it when she told him she'd make sure he never saw this child. And how awful to have to make that decision. I don't know what the laws are in Texas. I'm sure he maybe looked into them, but maybe her version against his version and all of the different nuances that are involved in that. I do feel like he could have had a shot.
Yeah.
But he wanted to know damn well he'd be an active role in his child's life, not just on the outskirts.
Right.
So they got married. Their son, Jamie, was about a year old when they divorced, though.
She did get pregnant.
She did get pregnant.
Okay.
She really was pregnant when he went to break up with her.
Well, I'm very sorry that I doubted that. Okay.
And some sources say that Jamie was a year old when they got divorced. Some say he was a little bit older, like, but still a toddler. Like, yeah, their young relationship just didn't. It was doomed from the start.
Yeah.
And then you add a child to it. It was like, this wasn't the baby to save your relationship kind of thing. But unfortunately, Jamie sort of paid the price for that. Jamie's childhood was chaotic, to say the least. Brian maintained an active role in his son's life like he always wanted to. But mm-hmm. Kim had a lot of control over their son. When he was a kid, he remembers her being loving and sweet one moment and then mean the next. She began verbally abusing him over the smallest of things.
Ugh.
She would call him stupid and make fun of him. If he got a stain on his clothing, she would hit him and berate him for it.
Aww.
And as a kid, who doesn't stain their clothing? I'd be more impressed if you didn't.
That's all you do.
That's part of growing up.
Yeah.
And then you get older and you're like, how am I still staining my shit?
Yeah.
It is what it is. Kim also then had other children. I know two of their names. I don't know the name of her first child, but one was Zach and the other was Luke, but I could not find birth years.
Okay.
I do know that Jamie was older and then Zach and then Luke. All three had different fathers.
Okay.
This becomes relevant later. While Jamie spent time with both Kim and Brian, he was primarily with Kim and didn't speak of the abuse he suffered at his mother's house when he was with his dad.
Aww.
So he kept it quiet.
Which to me just says there's conversations happening where he's being told this isn't okay, because otherwise kids don't have a reason to hide the things that are happening to them.
No, but Kim threatened him.
Of course.
And I'm sure on a little boy you see bumps and bruises and scratches and you're like, well, that's just a kid being a kid. That's just a boy being a boy.
Yeah.
And if he was in sports or anything like that, I think so much of it would have been so easy to
shrug off.
Yeah, to hide it in any way that you want to.
Yeah.
Which is awful. And I don't doubt that Kim knew that. But still, Jamie suffered this essentially in silence.
Oh, poor kid.
When Jamie stayed at Brian's house, sometimes he wouldn't want to talk to his mom on the phone. So Kim would call wanting to talk with him and Jamie didn't want to. And Brian wouldn't make him.
Yeah.
And this caused rifts between Kim and Brian because they got into it. Because at home, she'd talk to him. And so there's this one recording of a phone call where Kim's like, he's never not wanted to talk to me on the phone. You must not be letting him talk to me on the phone.
Mm.
And him saying, well, he just doesn't want to talk to you right now. I don't know.
Yeah.
Should he have made him? I don't know. That's not my decision. But I do think that there would have been hell for Jamie to pay when he was back with Kim.
Yeah.
For not taking that phone call that Brian probably knew nothing about.
Likely.
From a very young age, Jamie was responsible for, like, so many chores that a kid should not be responsible to have to do.
Aww.
Like, he was probably, like, 8 years old, and he had to do all of the laundry for everyone in the house. So, his laundry for his mom, his brothers, which I think is good to be responsible for your own, but I imagine maybe some of, like, your mother's delicates is just a little, also, perhaps, like, awkward. Maybe I'm being sensitive. I don't know.
No, I think that's fair. I also think that, like, I would have less of an issue with this if all of the kids had to do their own when they reached the same age. Mm-hmm. You know? I don't know that for a fact, but, like, it does seem to be, like, a lot to put on an 8-year-old, an entire family's worth of laundry as a chore.
Not only did he have to do the laundry, though, which I think, okay, I think that's a good chore. I think that that's helpful.
Yeah.
I think that chores are good for kids to have to do, apparently an unpopular opinion these days, but I think that that shows responsibility and that there are tasks that need to be done, and once I complete those, then I can go play outside or watch TV or have fun or do whatever.
Life skills.
But the issue was is that Kim had these impossibly high standards that a child was not going to reach. So if he didn't wash and fold and put away the laundry exactly how she'd want it to do, he would be punished.
Oh.
So at that point, if you're going to try really hard to get it done and you still get beat for it, why would you try hard to get it done?
Right. Yeah.
So one time he did laundry, but instead of folding it meticulously and putting it away, he ran out of time or I don't know, whatever, was being a little bit defiant. So he just opened a drawer and like shoved all of his clothes.
Yeah.
They were clean, but they weren't folded.
Okay.
And he just put them in the drawer and closed it. Well, when she found that, looked through his things, she beat him for not putting his laundry away correctly. Over unfolded laundry. Spoiler alert, there is a trial later.
Okay.
And during that trial, a school teacher testified. Now, sifting through the details, I couldn't find which child this teacher taught.
Okay.
But this teacher is referring to a meet the teacher night.
Okay.
And I do believe it's Jamie, and I also believe that at the time, maybe some of this was given, some of this testimony, like initial reports might have been given that he might have been underage where they didn't want to release his name.
Right.
Or it could have been about the brothers, because they are a lot younger, so that's possible too. I'm not quite sure.
Okay.
But regardless, this teacher recalled meeting Kim at one of the Meet the Teacher nights, and that she was abrasive and intimidating. She spoke for her son when he was asked questions and wouldn't let him respond by himself, which is a red flag.
Mm-hmm.
She had another younger child with her who was running around and just grabbed him by the arm like really hard and pulled him to her side, which just was a little bit too far for such a small kid.
Okay.
Later, either the same teacher or a different one also recalled that when a particular child, again, I think it's Jamie, would score any less than a 96% on an assignment, Kim called the teacher and asked that he be punished with additional work.
Oh.
The teacher wouldn't do it. He was doing great in school.
And yeah, 96 is not bad.
Was not going to punish him for still getting an A in the class and working really hard regardless. Even if the kid got a C, but he tried his hardest.
Right.
Then that is him trying his hardest. And that's what you want. You want to see effort, not perfection, right?
Yeah.
But Kim wanted perfection. Kim did not like that the teacher wouldn't punish him for not getting an A+ rather than just an A. So this is the kind of like domineering mother that we're talking about here.
Yeah.
Kim was very focused on appearances and sent Jamie to school with a slicked middle part.
Okay.
And I'll say this, that we talk a lot about Jamie because he's been more vocal about it. I'm sure his brothers have their own stories, but yeah, primarily he's the one that's willing to do interviews, and he is the oldest of at least the ones that we're talking about today.
Okay.
So I don't think that the others were immune to this treatment, but this is what we know. So he had to go with a slicked middle part, if you can imagine it.
Oh, I sure can.
Needless to say, it was not the most stylish haircut. And he felt uncomfortable and dorky going to school. And when you're like a kid, tween, teenager, like you're starting to feel a little bit uncomfortable and you're like, I don't like my hair like that. And like, no matter what you do or wear or how you look or do your hair, you feel uncomfortable and awkward and like wrong. And
it's the worst time.
It's just so weird. And then if your mom like put you in hair that you hated,
yeah,
that like other kids might have made fun of you for, with a middle part slicked,
a slicked middle part. And also, like, middle schoolers are fucking relentless
and they're so accurate.
Yep. Like, too accurate, like to the point where you're like, okay, can you come up with a metaphor of some kind, like make it a little off, please.
Like, it hoits. Okay. It hoits wicked bad. And for Jamie, he was sent with this hair and he couldn't stand it. And sometimes he would try to fix it when he got there, but it was like hairsprayed and gelled down.
Right. It's slicked. Ugh.
For class picture day, he couldn't stand his hair and he changed it before the photo, which was a big deal,
I'm sure.
But when the photos came in the mail and they finally got them and he goes home and shows his mom, because of course, you know, she bought the pictures, she saw that the pictures showed his hair not how she'd been sending him, and she beat him so severely that she choked him.
Oh my god.
With either a belt or her hands or something.
Oh my god.
Where he passed out. He actually blacked out. He thought he would die that day over this.
Like over hair.
Over these small, trivial, stupid things. One time she switched the locks on Jamie's bedroom door. So rather than him being able to lock the door from the inside, she could lock him in from the outside. It wasn't uncommon for him to be berated for yet another trivial thing and then locked in his own room. He would beg to be let out, having to use the bathroom, and sometimes he couldn't hold it, so he relieved himself outside of his bedroom window.
Yeah, I get that.
When she had moved, she moved to Tyler, Texas, or a suburb of Tyler. Mm-hmm. And she began school to become, get this, a licensed vocational nurse.
Oh.
And after she graduated, she worked in several hospitals in East Texas. And I assure you, the irony that she would enter a helping profession and be so cruel is not lost on us.
But not at all.
Come on, man.
I mean.
Ugh. Now that she was working, Kim needed reliable childcare. She had her youngest, Luke, where he wasn't quite yet in school, so he needed, like, throughout the day, not just after school or things like that. And nurses, not always, but depending on where you work and what specifically you're doing, you might be able to be a little bit more flexible with your hours. And I do believe that she was able to do that because she really only needed the childcare for the youngest.
Okay.
But to me, I think that was, like, all an all-day thing.
Right.
So this is where she found Cherry Walker.
Okay.
And you might know this name from the title of this episode.
I do.
Cherry, sometimes called Sherry.
Okay.
Was a woman with developmental disabilities.
Okay.
Who had a very childlike demeanor. She also had a seizure disorder, which was managed by medications.
Mm-hmm.
Cherry was able to live on her own and did have an apartment. She worked very limited hours at a local Goodwill, and she did babysitting on the side for some extra money.
Oh, okay.
Cherry was very sweet. She was always willing to help. She was just a genuinely pure person, very kind, very sweet. Kids loved her. There was an innocence about her that was genuine.
Yeah. It also sounds like she is, I don't know, like a kid's dream. Someone who's like fun that you get to hang out with. And it sounds like she's pretty independent. So that wasn't like a big issue, but
though Sherry was able to live mostly independently, and you're right about that, she did have in-home care help teach her a lot.
Okay. Yeah.
She had to be taught a lot of life skills like cooking and cleaning and how to use her phone, bill paying. I think a lot of that ended up getting set up for her. I mean, she was, at least in the eyes of the government, disabled. So she was like getting a disability, like she's getting disability payments and things. So I think a lot of that maybe was able to just go directly to that. And then she worked very limited Goodwill hours and limited time babysitting. But she was on the path of having the most independent life she could have.
Right.
And a lot of those necessary services were put in place for her.
And that's awesome. I love that we have those.
And I just want to point out here, because typically when we reference in-home care workers in true crime cases, it is not for savory reasons. And like many positions of power, it attracts the best of the best, but it can also attract the worst of the worst.
Yeah.
Even positions of power you may not consider quote unquote that powerful. If it's power over one person, it feels pretty powerful to them. Which is why we need to be very aware of who we allow into these positions. And I urge you to take a listen to our episode about the victimization of people with disabilities from way back when.
Please do.
Like episode 24, way back when.
Whoa, really?
Yes.
Oh my gosh, I remember that like it was yesterday.
Which I would kind of like to do a part two update to that because we were, you know, a wee bit rusty back in the early days. But I was so passionate about this topic, about the way that people with all different kinds of disabilities can be harmed, and the statistics of how likely we are to one day be considered disabled.
Oh, yeah.
And these services are incredible to have, but if you have the wrong people in them, they could do a lot of bad. So I just want to highlight here that we're not talking about the bad ones here. We're actually talking about some really incredible ones, and we're going to highlight one of them.
Good.
Because some of the most incredible, nurturing people are drawn to these positions, which don't pay enough to help those who need a little extra to live a healthy lifestyle of independence while also receiving care.
Yeah.
So my heart goes out to you. What an incredible job you all do. One of Cherry's in-home care workers was a woman named Paula Wheeler. And we're going to talk about Paula a lot.
Okay.
From her interviews and the Snapped episodes, I just thought she was an absolute badass who had Cherry's best interests in mind. She's one of the good ones.
Yes, Paula.
So we're going to jump to June 18th, 2010.
Okay.
This is the day that Cherry Walker went missing.
Oh, God.
The next day, a pizza delivery driver was making a delivery when he took the wrong turn down an ill-traveled road and saw something that just didn't look right. In the field just off the road, he saw what looked to be a person. And he got out of his car to investigate. And then he got right back in his car and he called the police.
I bet he did.
And he did the right thing, because deputies arrived to find the charred remains of an unknown woman.
I'm sorry?
There was no identification. There was no purse or wallet at the scene. And it would take investigators a bit to actually identify who this was. All that was found at the scene was a coffee creamer container, like a little one, you know, the ones that you get at like coffee shops and diners and fast food places, just a tiny one of those, which at the time, I'm sure they didn't know whether this was related or not.
Right.
But of course, I'm bringing it up here. It's related. The remains of this unidentified woman were brought to the local coroner for autopsy, at which time the coroner really struggled to identify a cause of death.
Oh.
Instead, listed it as something to the effect of homicidal force. Thankfully, if there's anything to be grateful for here, it's that the victim is believed to have been dead before she was set on fire, as there was very little smoke in her lungs.
Okay.
And I am realizing now that we have back-to-back had fire-related cases. As you well know, Abby doesn't know the cases that I'm choosing, and I don't know the cases that she's choosing, so this was entirely accidental. My apologies.
Sorry, guys.
But we can at least be happy, if there is something to focus on here that is good, is that it's believed she was deceased before the fire even started.
Okay. I'll take that if I have to take something.
All they really knew was that the victim was an African-American female, approximate height and weight, and approximate age.
Right.
That's essentially all they could do.
Oh my gosh.
They were forced to take dental impressions so that they could hopefully identify her, but Obviously, you first need existing records to compare them to for that to be useful. And at this time, investigators enlisted the help of the public, reporting that a body was found, a very general description of what they could do, where she was found, because it's really all they had.
Right.
They didn't have a whole lot to go off of. It's hard to give details about something you don't have details for.
Yeah.
So on June 20th, 2010, Cherry's father went to the police and said, "I think that's my daughter."
Oh.
She hadn't been heard from, but the strangest part was that she'd missed church, and she never missed church.
Yeah.
Her dad was a preacher at their church, and that Sunday service took place on Father's Day.
Oh.
He knew she definitely wouldn't have missed that. And with his help, they were able to confirm that the victim they had was 39-year-old Cherry Walker. Her father encouraged police to talk to Joseph Mayo, who was either her friend or boyfriend. It seems like he believed they were dating, but most others called him her friend, so I don't know. They met working at Goodwill together. That was the only person that her dad could think of that Cherry spent extra time with, other than like her in-home care workers or anybody else that she might see daily. This was somebody that she was like actively trying to spend time with.
Right. Like enjoy their company.
So they go to this Joseph guy and they interview him, and he asked a very strange question.
Oh.
They're talking about Cherry and how do you know her and when did you meet and how often did you see her and blah, blah, blah. And he said, "How did she die?"
Oh.
Which was pretty odd. And especially odd when you've not actually been told she's dead yet.
Yeah.
So they're like, "How do you know her?" And, you know, "How'd you guys meet?" And he's like,
ears perk up.
Not did she die, it's how did she die?
Yeah.
So they're like, "Well, how do you know she's dead?" And it kind of starts down that. But he had assumed she was dead if they were talking about her at all. And to him, it seemed serious. So it kind of seemed like
she was dead.
She must be. And there was also that news coverage about someone being found dead. So we kind of connected the dots.
Yeah.
And they leaned into him because they're like, maybe they had a fight. Maybe something happened. He obviously knew that she's dead. Why is he asking how she died? But he wasn't their guy. He had a solid alibi.
Okay.
One that videos confirmed. He was actually singing karaoke at the time.
Yes, Joseph.
So he was having a grand old time and was far away from where any of this took place, and it wasn't him.
Do you think his karaoke song was Bohemian Rhapsody?
I don't know what his karaoke song would have been, but kind of strikes me as a Britney.
Ooh, yeah. Okay, I can see it. Maybe Circus.
Maybe it would have been like One More Time.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is it called Hit Me or One More Time?
I think it's technically both. I think it's Hit Me and then in parentheses One More Time. But
Brittany, let us know.
Yeah, babes. Sorry. Sometimes I need a breather. And I love the idea of figuring out people's karaoke songs.
I love that for you.
Thank you. Okay. Anyway, so he's not their guy. He was singing Hit Me Baby One More Time. Freaky Friday was on in his head. All right, continue.
As it should be. Absolutely. Right. That's exactly what happened. So obviously he was devastated to find out that she was dead. And I do feel for him in that way. But
absolutely.
Investigators moved on from him and they're like, okay, so who then? Because she was so sweet. She was a friend to everybody. She didn't know a stranger. She was that kind of person.
Yeah.
Her family loved her. Like, she was beloved at church. She always sat front row. And then her seat's empty at church.
Right.
And then people are like, okay, well, we haven't heard from her. Then enter Paula Wheeler, resident badass and one of Cherry's caretakers.
Okay, Paula.
She told investigators that they had to look into Kimberly Cargill.
Oh.
She said this all had to do with Cherry's disability. She told them Cherry suffered from a developmental disability where she had the mentality of a child. And that Kim took advantage of this.
Oh, so maybe she, I don't know, like didn't know how to follow through with like life skills and that kind of thing.
She did really struggle with that. I mean, she did need daily help.
Right. Okay.
And that Kim had her babysit for her young son, but didn't pay Cherry.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, that's so cruel. Okay.
On the rare occasions where she did pay, She'd give her something like $20 for an entire week.
Oh, Kimberly.
Cherry didn't really know how to navigate this. She didn't even realize she was being taken advantage of. In fact, Paula said that if you gave Cherry five $1 bills, she'd think she'd have a lot of money.
Mm.
Like, it was just the quantity of bills, not able to count the money, not able to really quantify that in her mind.
Right.
So if Kimberly gave her, you know, $20, but 20 $1 bills.
Right.
Cherry didn't know how she was going to spend all that money.
Okay.
Kim would drop her son off with her. So Kim would bring Luke and drop him off at Cherry's apartment and would expect him to be watched for the day, but not provide any food for him. So Cherry would use her food stamps on Luke because she wanted to make sure that he ate.
Right.
It seemed Cherry cared more about the child's well-being than his own mother, and that was probably true. But Cherry cared so much for that boy.
Yeah.
To the best of her ability. Paula was over Cherry's apartment when Cherry was served with a subpoena. Now, Cherry was very confused about what this meant and what she had to do.
Right.
That she was to appear in a custody hearing regarding the boy Cherry babysat.
Okay.
So she's being called to testify regarding Kimberly and her ex about Luke.
Okay, yeah.
Cherry was confused. She didn't really know what any of that meant, and Paula had to explain to her that she had to testify, that she would have to go and talk, and Cherry felt uneasy about it.
Okay.
She called Kim, and she told her about the subpoena immediately. Kim assured Cherry over the phone that she didn't actually have to go, and she wouldn't need to testify at all.
That's poor legal advice.
Oh, yeah, you're getting Cherry in trouble. But Paula overheard the conversation, and she wasn't going to sit idly by, so she hopped on the phone to speak with Kim, and she said, no, don't tell her no. Don't tell her she doesn't need to go. She will get in trouble.
Yeah.
Like, this, you're encouraging,
it's a subpoena.
You're encouraging her to break the law. She has to go.
Yeah.
She's required to go. And Kim said, no, I'll pick Cherry up and bring her to my house. And she can hide out there for the day. And she won't have to go. It'll be fine.
Hide out?
Yeah. Like, she was going to, like, hide her. And Paula, again, just discouraged this. She was like, no, don't do that. Please don't do that. And after that call was over, Paula sat with Cherry and was like, you do need to, you know, she explained it to her, like, it's the legal thing to do. It's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
And Cherry felt uneasy. She didn't want to do anything wrong. But she did ultimately decide to follow the law. Like, she made she made up her mind. She was going to go.
Yeah.
And Kim was pissed.
Okay.
Later on, Paula got a call from Cherry saying Kim called her to invite her to dinner to talk about everything.
Okay.
And Cherry had already eaten dinner and didn't want to go and wanted to know what she should say. Mm. Paula encouraged her, just tell her you don't want to go to dinner. You don't have to go. Keep the door locked. You don't need to open it. You don't need to go.
Yeah.
Next, Paula heard Cherry was missing.
Oh.
Unbeknownst to Cherry, her testimony would have severely damaged Kim's case, and it should have.
Yeah.
Put a pin here, because, mind you, the abuses that Kim's children suffered at her hands were largely downplayed, if reported at all, for a very long time.
Yep.
But Kim had been reported on by CPS, but she hadn't been arrested for any child abuse as of yet. It takes time to build those cases, but her oldest and one of her other children were already living with their fathers full time.
Okay.
I'm assuming due to the accusations, but I can't confirm that. Jamie had finally told his dad about what had happened all of those years and what was still going on.
Go, Jamie!
About being strangled to the point of passing out and the years of abuse, the beatings, the verbal abuse, being locked in his bedroom, punished for grades below an A+, all of it.
That's so hard to do. Ugh.
This time, there was evidence. There were bruises and marks all over Jamie's body that Brian took photos of and reported to the police immediately. As soon as he was aware of what was going on, the police were aware of what was going on.
Good.
He was fighting for full custody of Jamie, and Jamie did not want to go to her house anymore. Understandably so. He didn't want to be there. And so he didn't. So of Kim's four children, she only had one left in her custody.
Oh my gosh.
So her oldest was with his father. Jamie was with Brian.
Yeah.
Zach was with his dad. And that left Luke.
Right.
And the only one left in her custody was the one child that Cherry was called to testify about.
Got it.
If Cherry were to testify, it would reveal how, in all likelihood, Cherry wasn't able to be the sole caretaker for a four-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
She could hardly take care of herself. She did need help. And while she was doing well with the help that she had, she probably wouldn't know what to do in an emergency situation. These are my words. I'm not saying right. that this is what the sources said, but while I think she could have been a great helper for a lot of things, I think being the sole responsible party, if he started to choke or he needed to go to the hospital
right.
or anything like that, I don't know. I didn't know her. But from reports, it seemed like it was questionable as to how she would have been put in charge of something that is so important.
Right.
Where she really struggled to make a lot of those decisions for herself. So making them for another dependent being would have been challenging.
Right. And I was going to say, I think it's amazing that she was able to live as independently as she did. And that speaks volumes to like the patience and teaching of the people around her, but also now better understanding sort of her capacity for some of those basic life skills, tasks like budgeting and sort of the day-to-day executive functioning as an adult. I think that would be difficult to sort of put her in sole care. No, in sole caretaking.
She was, responsibilities were put on her that she, in all likelihood, probably couldn't complete.
Right. And that's not fair to her or Luke.
No, it's not fair to anybody. But right. Kimberly saw somebody that she could take advantage of, that she could not pay well. Luke probably loved being with Cherry.
Right.
Cherry loved this boy. And yeah. he loved her too. He looked forward to going there. He was treated well and she was thrilled to have him. And she treated him like her own.
Right.
I have no doubt that his experience was great.
Absolutely.
And it was probably the highlight of his life, given what we know about how she parents.
Yeah.
But Cherry being the sole person responsible for a four-year-old boy when she herself needed so much help wasn't fair to anybody.
Right.
So, Kim was sweating because if Cherry were to testify, it would reveal that Cherry probably shouldn't have been the sole caretaker for this child,
mm-hmm.
and Kim knowingly left her child in the care of this person without even properly providing any kind of food or supply or anything that would be needed.
Yeah.
And not even paying her. I mean, just her being there alone and them being able to see her interact would have, like, if they said, oh, and, you know, what is your pay agreement?
Right.
Cherry wouldn't be able to speak to that because there really wasn't one.
Yeah.
Because she wasn't getting it. You know what I mean? So Kim was scared because three of her four children have already been taken away.
Mm-hmm.
Concerning.
Yeah.
So Kim feared that this little tidbit here about her babysitter would be all that a judge would need to take her last child away from her. And before anybody asks, I do not know. I don't know the laws regarding how a mother can be deemed an unfit parent for three children yet still have custody of a fourth. I don't know why our system is such that she could have another child right then and we would need to wait until there was undeniable evidence of abuse against that child to then remove that child. I don't know. There are so many things involved in that. I won't pretend to understand. That is a whole different side of the legal system. So I don't have an answer for you as to why this four-year-old hadn't already been removed pending some kind of assessment. We know that she still had him. Apparently it was being questioned. Cherry was called to speak on it and immediately called Kim to let her know that she was subpoenaed.
Yeah.
In hindsight, probably none of this would have happened had Kim not known about that subpoena.
Right.
But
Cherry's a good person, so she tries to do the right thing. Oh.
So
it hurts.
Kimberly had motive and she had opportunity. And when a search warrant for Kim's vehicle was executed, something very odd was found.
Huh.
And by that, I mean nothing was found. Huh. It was spotless, even. It was so clean. And all who knew Kim knew her car was filthy inside. Just dirty. But also full of wrappers and food, crumbs, bags, bottles, mini coffee creamers, dipping sauces, fast food bags, hats, random shit. Mom shit, but also random shit.
Oh.
So why was her car abso-fucking-lutely spotless just days after the murder of her babysitter?
Now, this is a mighty interesting time to do spring cleaning.
Isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
The coffee creamer found at the scene was swabbed for DNA, but they didn't have a sample to match it to.
Mm-hmm.
Until Kimberly was arrested.
Ooh.
Not for what you think. She was arrested for the abuse against Jamie.
Hey.
Because, of course, when Brian found out and brought it to police and provided those photos, Jamie then gave a statement. She was arrested for causing injury to a child. Now, I'm sure that was pending more things to come.
Right.
But they could prove this part. At the time of her booking for this, DNA was taken. This is the DNA that was cross-referenced with what was found in the coffee creamer, and it was a match.
Okay.
Cherry was in Kim's car. I believe a hair was also found.
Okay.
That was believed to be Cherry's, but I didn't see that as like, aha, it's this. So could go either way. But believing that the coffee creamer was in Kim's car, which it usually had a lot of, and that creamer was then found at the scene,
mm-hmm.
kind of connected the dots for everybody that Cherry was in Kim's car, at least at one point.
Yeah.
And if having motive, opportunity, and DNA evidence at the scene wasn't enough, there was more.
Oh.
Her body had been doused in lighter fluid and set ablaze. And lighter fluid isn't exactly something you carry in your back pocket, which means that they were actually able to try her for first-degree murder.
Hey.
Because they believed that she brought it with the intent to use it, which suggested to police that this wasn't a spur-of-the-moment rage attack, that it was premeditated.
Yeah, it sounds that way.
And even further still, another element. One of Kim's friends reported receiving a phone call from her where she was agitated because her babysitter had been found dead and burned in a field. What was weird about that, you might wonder? The timing. Because the name of the victim hadn't been released to the public, so apparently, police and Kimberly Cargill knew
Wow.
who the deceased was. How would Kim know that? So on July 29th, 2010, Kimberly Cargill was arrested for the murder of Cherry Walker.
Good.
In that trial, which began in May 2012, the following information was presented. Her motive, to silence Cherry and prevent her from losing custody of her fourth child.
Mm-hmm.
The DNA on the coffee creamer found at the scene. The newly spotless vehicle. The phone call to her friend about her dead babysitter when no one even knew that yet. And also this. Phone records showed that Kim had placed more than 70 phone calls to Cherry before she died.
Oh!
Like rapid fire calling trying to reach her about this hearing.
Good.
But after the murder, not a single phone call to Cherry. How would she have known? How would she have known Cherry wasn't going to answer?
Right.
And then also, her violent history.
Choking is a really serious fucking thing to do to someone, especially your own child.
To the point of blacking out.
And if you can do that, I have no doubt you can do other things to people that aren't your own children.
Correct. And then again, the lighter fluid was brought up because you can't just say, well, it was a rage killing or anything like that. It was like, you brought lighter fluid. That's not something you keep in your car.
No.
That's not something you have in your back pocket. I don't have my lucky lighter fluid on me right now. It's not on my keychain.
Even people who have lighters that require lighter fluid don't have to fill it up often enough to keep it out.
It's also just not a super safe thing to keep in the car.
Yeah, because it's fucking flammable.
So there's that. Defense did something wild. They said, yeah, no. We know Kim dumped her body. And yes, she did light her body on fire. And that's bad, and it's wrong, and it's naughty. But she didn't kill her.
Huh?
This was the gap in the prosecution's case that defense tried to use to their advantage. the cause of death. It was muddy. They couldn't say either way how she died, just that they believed it was homicidal force, mm-hmm. and that though she was set on fire, that that wasn't what killed her.
Okay.
So it's really hard to prove a murder when you can't prove how that person died. If you're going to say that they were killed, you need to say how.
Right.
Right? So even with all of these other things that the prosecution had, defense had this thing. But they weren't saying she had nothing to do with it. They were saying she panicked. Defense claimed that Cherry did eventually agree to go to dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's true. I didn't see anything that denied that.
Okay.
Except I don't think they made it to dinner.
Yeah.
I believe Cherry got in her car, and I believe it was willingly. But defense said that they did actually go to dinner. And apparently that dinner was around like 9:30, which I'm like, I haven't gone to a dinner at 9:30. I don't think ever. That is bedtime.
Yeah.
And I don't know.
That's time for like fat pants and ice cream.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I might eat at that time. I'm not going to dinner at 9:30. Are you kidding me?
Not with the mom of someone I babysit.
No.
Or my child's babysitter.
Not me. Not here.
Not now. Not never.
Not now. Oh, not never. Gosh. So then apparently at around 10:30, they left this restaurant, according sure. to defense. According to defense, allegedly, Kim was taking Cherry home when Cherry asked if she could actually be dropped off at a friend's house instead. Mm-hmm. But Kim told her no. Cherry got upset and she started violently thrashing.
Oh.
Which I guess her seizure disorder that she had, when she would get upset, she would get like shaking, like she would shake. Sure. But it would be shaking, not like...
thrashing.
Correct.
Those are different.
But apparently, Cherry was so upset about being told no regarding not being dropped off at the friend's house that she started violently hitting her head into the passenger side window and, like, caused brain damage.
Okay.
When Kim got the car to the side of the road, she realized that Cherry wasn't breathing. She claims to have performed CPR, but knew how bad it looked, and she panicked. So, knowing that Cherry was dead, she brought the body to that field, doused her in lighter fluid, and set her on fire. This is what they said. They really said that.
Sorry, I know you guys can't see my face, but it really says it all. I don't... What the fuck? Okay.
I know that defense attorneys get a lot of crap, and sometimes I agree with it.
Mm-hmm.
But the vast majority of times, I am still grateful because that is a right of ours.
Oh, yeah.
That if something were to happen involving any of us, that we would also seek professional help and we would seek an attorney. So I'm not shitting on them for doing their jobs.
Yeah.
But I am shitting on this is what you came up with. Encourage your client to take a deal because the case was made.
Okay. Yeah. Here's my thing. I appreciate defense attorneys. It's a constitutional right. I'm always pro constitutional rights. I'm good with that.
Mm-hmm.
The thing I dislike about this is that a defense attorney, should they be a good one, their job is to get you the best deal they can get you. It's not to falsely proclaim innocence or to falsely proclaim guilt. It is quite literally to say, what do we have here and what can we do with it?
Well, falsely proclaim innocence is actually most of what they do. I don't know if they have to, but it's going to get you the best deal.
It sure will try to get you the best deal, but I'm saying there are ways we can go about this that don't just so blatantly disrespect somebody this way. And I think it is that's so frustrating. Like, I'm sorry, I don't give a shit what it looks like. You know what looks worse? Not calling 911.
You had every opportunity to call 911, to bring her to a hospital, to do anything other than say, well, she's dead.
If that's
let's light her on fire in a field.
Right. If she even had some sort of a medical issue like this.
And she did. She did have that disorder.
Yeah.
But it does not mean that that is how it happened. So you right. just took somebody's medical history and like weaponized it in their death against them. And I really struggle with that.
Well,
I don't think
it's
the worst defense I've ever heard. I actually think.
No, I've heard worse.
They could have done more with it.
But then to go out and say that, like, I cared enough to try to perform life-saving CPR, to try to take care of her, to, like, take her home, make sure she gets there safe. But, well, now that she's dead, I guess I'll just have to fucking light her on fire?
Yeah.
Get so real. What the hell? Okay.
Yep.
All right. I gotta be done. I'm sorry.
I won't insult your intelligence with more of her lies.
Thanks.
But that is what really defense hung their hat on. And it's really all they did have. Defense looks at the prosecution's case and says, where can we poke holes?
Absolutely.
That is essentially what that is. And sometimes they do an excellent job of that. And in this case, they exploited the right point.
Yeah.
But not well enough to fool a jury, I guess, because they reached a verdict and it was, what? Guilty.
Ayo.
Beep, 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 beep. Because of the nature of her crime, though, she was eligible for the death penalty.
Okay.
And in Texas, once a guilty verdict is reached in a first-degree murder case, because it has to be, of course, the first-degree murder case.
Right.
There's actually a second trial that begins, which is to determine whether or not the defendant will receive the death penalty.
Yeah.
So now we're in trial number two.
Yes.
And during this sentencing trial, three of Kim's four children took the stand to testify to the abuse and torture they suffered by her.
That is so brave.
All of it. One of the kids said, quote, there was never a moment I wasn't afraid.
Mm.
This is where teachers testified. Teachers testified to what we said earlier, but also one also noted that there were some marks on some of the kids that were easily dismissed, but noticeable, and that sometimes they noticed that one of the kids would wear like long sleeves and long pants in really hot months, and you're in Texas.
Yeah.
So that seemed to be like they were trying to cover something. A lot of things that maybe you realize later. One of the teachers recalled during a meeting with Meet the Teacher Night that she cried when another family cut in front of her in line. Like, Kimberly cried. I'm not talking about the kids.
No, of course. They were too scared to cry.
Kimberly cried when, like, another family, she perceived that she was cut in line. Doesn't mean that she was. So there's that. Her criminal history was also mentioned because when her prints were taken, they matched a Kimberly West, which was her married name, during her first marriage. And she had a record of assaults at that time in her life. So she did actually have that history. Her first husband, Michael West, testified that she'd thrown glasses and knives or whatever she could reach at him during a fight.
Oh.
She once purposefully drove their car into a wall in their garage. She falsely reported an assault to police, for which he served 6 months of probation, even though he did not touch her. His words, I'm not going to say either way, but he did say this. She also kicked his new wife in the stomach. When their son would return from visits at her house, he sometimes had marks on him, but she had an excuse always.
Mm-hmm.
When their son would get back, also, he would be really aggressive for a few days after returning from stays with her. And then it would kind of subside the longer he was with, like, his better family, I guess, is a lack of a better way to put that. But they even noticed in their son, and again, this is, I believe, first husband, so that first child, that he would be so angry after coming home that he'd need a few days to cool off. Like,
yeah,
he was acting out. Well, maybe he was replicating, like, he was just mirroring what he'd seen, but he was so naughty.
Yeah.
And then he would be fine after a few days, and then he'd go back to her for a few days, and he'd come home, and it'd be the same thing. And he'd have marks and bruises, but again, kids being kids, running around, like, your kid's gonna get skinned knees, and they probably should.
Yeah.
So it was kind of trying to balance, like, is this more than it looks like, or is this normal? That child ended up needing therapy for a decade to cope with the abuse that he was in.
Yeah.
And he was in college when he testified against her in this case.
Ugh.
He had trouble sleeping leading up to the testimony, so even as an adult, he struggled with this. He reported that he wrote a letter when he was 6 or 7 that said when his mom choked him, it felt like an alligator biting his neck.
Oh my gosh.
There is so much more testimony. So much that isn't mentioned in the first trial that is only included here in the sentencing phase. but she was ultimately sentenced to death.
Okay.
She has filed several appeals, but she is still on death row. Jamie struggled with his mental health for years as a result of her abuse and developed a substance use disorder. He got himself sober, he got married, and he vowed that he would never be the kind of parent his mother was. And his life changed for the better when his own son was born.
Wow.
Lastly, I want to talk about Cherry.
Yeah.
She was innocent in all of this and loved by so many. She didn't exactly understand everything going on or the severity of it in terms of what Kimberly was doing, but she was sweet and always willing to help, and she wanted to.
Yeah.
She loved Luke like he was her own, and she did her best to care for him. And I didn't see any reports saying that the way that Cherry cared for Luke was inadequate.
Yeah.
So I don't have a reason to believe that, but I do believe that Kim knew that this would not bode well for her, that she was leaving her child with somebody that she likely shouldn't have, and she probably should have gotten daycare.
Right.
Cherry was 39. She was on her way to having the most independent life that she could have, mm-hmm. and her parents were so happy for her.
Right.
They loved her. Again, she was always sitting front row at church, so when she didn't show that day, it was so odd.
Especially on Father's Day.
On Father's Day, when your dad's the preacher.
Yeah.
But her life was taken because of Kim's poor decisions, because of Kim's issues, because of Kim's selfishness and her violent tendencies. Cherry wouldn't have hurt a fly. And she loved that boy.
Yeah.
And that is what I have for you today.
Wow, I have so many thoughts. My mind is so full.
I should have gone and listened to our episode on the victimization of people with disabilities before I just mentioned it again, because I feel like maybe I want to redo it.
Yeah.
Just to say it better. I think there's so much to say. That episode was long too, if I recall. But yeah. There's so many different ways that people who have disabilities are victimized. And hers is a perfect example of being taken advantage of, even though she had the proper supports in place.
Right.
She obviously still made her own decisions.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's worth noting, like, we had that entire episode on it. I'd love to see us do a new one, just or a little more articulate or a little better with the audio recording now. And I think we have more examples to pull from of just the vastness of ways you can be taken advantage of in those situations. And is it always a crime? No, but it's not never a crime. And it is almost always less reported on.
Absolutely.
I think this is an exact case that shows, you know, without someone like Paula to really be her advocate and her voice after this occurred, where would we be? Did anybody else know that she did this that frequently, and how much longer would it have taken to get there?
Right.
Is a scary thought. And man, this hurts my heart. Like, I, you know this, mm-hmm. listeners don't, but like, I started working. The first job I had was caring for a little girl who had special needs, and later a woman who had a disability like this. And it's just, it was honestly one of the most proud moments of my life to be able to be there for those people, because mm-hmm. It was literally just life stuff. I was like, oh, okay, I'll heat up the food on the stove, mm-hmm. you know, and like, that's something you can do to feel good and to care for someone and to give back. But it is such a position of power and control, because you do have control over so much of somebody's life mm-hmm. in this way. I control what we eat, when we eat, how we eat. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. All of these basic things that so many people take for granted that can be used as a power and control tactic if left to the wrong person. And also, all of the people that I've worked with that have a disability or a special need have bigger hearts than almost anybody else I've ever met.
Yeah.
If not the biggest. Mm-hmm. And so it is not at all a shock to me that Luke would love going there and that he would be in really great hands while he was there, barring an emergency. And mm-hmm. I think that that is really important to look at when you have a child and you're looking for childcare. But I also think it's really worth noting that, like, that was probably a really great relief in his life to have Cherry there.
Absolutely. But it was Kimberly taking such advantage of Cherry to say, I'm not going to pay you. I'm not going to leave food for him or supplies that a four-year-old needs or toys or anything. So, so much of that was even the financial aspect on things that Cherry couldn't afford.
Right.
But she wasn't going to let this child go hungry either. So I am willing to bet that Cherry paid better attention and took better care of that child than Kimberly did and probably would have as he got older.
Oh, yeah.
Given the abuse that she already inflicted on her other kids. But it was selfish to put all of that on Cherry.
Oh, yeah.
And absolutely, that would have gotten her child taken away from her.
And I think it's, you know, not to be insensitive to parents going through custody battles and things like this. But if you've lost three of your four, we have not even yet taken a moment to self-reflect and ask why and maybe make some changes. The automatic response is to tell a woman who is overtly trusting that she should break the law and hide out at your house. And when she doesn't do that and she actually goes, you murder her.
Yeah. So then she, instead of saying, oh, you don't have to testify, she's like, all right, it's fine. Let me bring you to dinner and we can talk about what to say.
Oh,
and great. Then Cherry was like, well, I don't know if I want to go. And that's when she called Paul and she's like, well, I already ate dinner. I don't know that I want dinner. And Paul is like, you don't have to go.
Yeah, queen, don't go.
You don't go. You don't have to go. Keep the door locked. And then the next thing Paula heard was that Cherry was missing. So Cherry went.
Right. And that's all we know.
And that's all we know.
You know, I think the other thing that this case raises for me, or the other issue, is just the red flag of not knowing when your child is not okay somewhere else. There are some red flags that popped up in this one. I think especially if you have a custody arrangement with someone who, whether or not it's them or a partner they currently have or somebody who's in the house that might be abusing the child, like when they come back and it takes days for them to get back to normal and in their routine, that's like a big red flag. And I know that with kids, a lot of things can be explained away, you know, the skinned knees, the cuts, the scrapes, the bruises, but also just looking for those patterns and looking for patterns and stories as to what happened. If you have a bruise on your arm from playing on the monkey bars one day, and then you have a giant bruise on your hip from playing on the monkey bars, let's maybe look at why those two very different issues are coming from the same story.
I also think that with Kimberly having children from four different men, that each of those children only had her in common.
Right.
So whatever that arrangement was or what it grew to be, whether it was weekends or anything, I don't know how much the others really knew about what was happening to the others.
Right.
And those fathers could only pick up on, you know, their child and seeing that. But I think had everybody like been in one room and been able to compare notes, you know, years earlier, they probably could have put more together. Do you know what I'm saying? Where that like the spread out of all of that, and then one by one, the fathers come in and take the children, that, you know, Luke's dad was dealing with that. He wanted full custody. Right. That's why they were doing the custody hearing. I mean, it was rooted in somebody saying something isn't right here. And that doesn't mean that Kimberly wouldn't have custody again or visitation or whatever, but like some intervention needed to be in before she harmed more children like that. That was what needed to happen.
Yeah.
It never got to get that far because Cherry wasn't able to go to that hearing because she was dead before it.
Right.
And Kimberly threw away her entire future. I would have preferred her to have just gotten arrested for the child abuse years ago.
Yeah.
But that never came out.
Also, what a way to guarantee you lose custody over your children.
Did you think nobody was going to notice? Although Paula was a fucking badass, though, because she was like, oh, you want to know who you should look at? You need to look at this one.
Yeah. Ugh, snaps for Paula. We love Paula.
Snapped again? You're going to make a reference?
Yeah, sorry.
I will say, though, watching the Evil Lives Here episode and the Snapped episode, like, almost no overlap of people interviewed. Like, they tell such different stories.
Wow.
Because Snapped focused so much on Kimberly and Cherry.
Yeah.
And Evil Lives Here focuses on... Evil lives here, where? In the house. So it was so much of like Jamie's and Brian's feedback.
Got it.
Of like what Jamie's childhood was like. So that's so much of what was pulled from that.
Yeah.
And then the Snapped episode really gave a good idea of like the dynamic of Kimberly and Cherry and Paula and all that. So two very different sort of stories told in each episode. And I just sort of tried to tell both.
I like that we got the range, though, because I think it's important to know sort of the difference in what you're portraying to other people and what's really going on behind the scenes. Those are two very different people sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Also, just like a little reminder, I don't know if your kids ever have to go through anything like this and you know about it, give them extra hugs. Their brains are still developing. They don't know it's as not okay as it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
And if you are going through something like this where your child is having to testify or share abuse, if they're under 18, they almost always have to go through some sort of like child advocacy department, whether that is like through the state or through DCYF or like a health and human services kind of situation. And that's a lot of bravery for a kid to go and tell strangers things that it took them years to tell their own parents. So I don't know. Save up, take them to dinner after, like,
yeah,
I don't know, give them some extra love. That's so shitty. That's so hard.
I know it is.
Anyway, that's my rant. Sorry, this was a rough one.
I know, and I think it's important for many reasons. First of all, I think we spend a lot of time, at least as of late, usually like male offenders, and I'm like, oh no. Yeah. No, women do it too.
Yeah.
And this violence, this is so unlikely for a woman.
Yeah, statistically at least.
So I felt led to tell Cherry's story because she seems like such a fun, incredible, sweet, innocent, genuine person, and I wish I knew her.
Yeah.
And now no one will get to because Kimberly is selfish and awful and on death row.
Yeah.
And of course she continues to appeal, and I'm sure that there'll be updates in the future, but she got all the time in the world to appeal, and she will.
Well, we've only been paying for her to be there for, what, 13 years? Anyway, not the time. So if you guys wanted to see the people, the places, the things that we're talking about, again, as always, you can go find that on our Instagram, which you can find through a link tree if you don't have it. Just a little reminder, please do download, subscribe, rate us. Leave us a little message if you can. It keeps us going in the mind, in the body, in the spirit. And if you wanted to keep us going in the dough, you could also donate on Venmo or PayPal. Those are also in the link tree. But we love you. We'd love to hear from you. And thank you for this little tale.
Thanks for hanging out with us. And if I do look at my clock, that was
about time for true crime. Bye.
Bye.